All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Hope you guys are all right. We've got a cool show today. We've got a couple of things going on. Basically, with all the news that dropped in the last few days, I've got a couple of interviews just covering that. So we have got basically two brilliant broadcasters, two people that I'm pleased don't do an Oasis podcast because it would be far better than this one. First off is Chris from the Stage Left podcast. He's been on here before, but not for a little while. Great guy, does some amazing work over at the Stage Left podcast, and also these live things he does, the Stage Left Nights and the shows he does at the Groucho. So yeah, make sure you check him out. But we are touching on the news and stuff with Noel's song and the Liam Acoustic Sessions album. And then similarly, I've got another interview here as well. That's also with Ben Burrell. Ben Burrell is on Absolute Radio, and he also does his own couple of podcasts, a Bob Dylan one and the Long Player Pod. And Long Player Pod I've mentioned on Twitter before. I might have mentioned it on here as well. They did an episode on Standing on the Shoulder of Giants, which was really good. Really well put together audio essay rather than kind of podcast. He's actually, you know, it's written out, it's produced really well. You know, he doesn't just make it up on the hoof like I do. So it's a really good piece of work. So, yeah, so we talk a bit about the news with him as well. Plus also we've just around about the 20th anniversary of Standing on the Shoulder of Giants. So we dig into that a bit as well. So a bit of news, bit of 20th anniversary of Standing on the Shoulder. And, yeah, just a bit about Ben's life as well and growing up and all that sort of stuff that we talk about over here. So I won't go into the acoustic sessions and stuff here because we talk about it in the interview. A couple of other news bits to mention. Liam's son Gene is in court over an affray charge. Him and Sonny Starkey, which is Ringo's grandson, were messing about last May and went to court about that. And that's apparently going to go to trial. And then the other thing that happened this week is that Liam's been doing some gigs. He played in Hamburg, did three songs, but then three songs in, this happened.
But the voice ain't happening. You can get all your money back at the fucking door. I'm really fucking sorry.
Yeah, so he walked off, leaving people not very happy. He then tweeted about it, basically saying that, you know, his vocal cords were inflamed. He's had a cortisone injection, and as we speak, this is being recorded Friday night, because that's how I spend my Friday nights, talking randomly to you guys. He is currently playing in Amsterdam, and as at the time of recording, he hasn't walked off, so it sounds like he might get through this one. He's got some more stuff coming up as well. He's supposed to be playing in Belgium tomorrow, Cologne, Germany on Monday, Berlin Tuesday, Munich Thursday. Then he's got gigs Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah, it's busy. It's busy. Then a bit of a gap then from Friday 21st of February through to 12th of June. There's currently a bit of a gap. But yeah, it's a busy old European tour he's got coming up. If anyone's going to see him on those tours and you want to drop me a review, then please do. But yeah, let's hope he holds up because cortisone injections into your vocal cords. Ooh, okay. And yeah, I suppose the only other news today, I don't really like getting into all this kind of reunion sort of rumor news. But this sort of, you know, was a relatively big one in all the back and forth that we get. So, yeah, basically it started, Liam tweeted that we've been offered £100 million for a tour, still not enough for the greedy soul. Oh, well, stay young, LG. And then Noel then did come back. And what was interesting is, you remember Noel, this Twitter account called at Dem Scissors started up around the time of Charlotte joining and all the chat about scissors. And we've never known whether it is actually Noel doing that or if it's someone in Noel's team. And I've asked sort of Jess and YZ, and we can't get to the bottom of whether it is or not. But yeah, this so Dem Scissors, from not having done anything for ages, then suddenly appears, starts doing a bunch of random tweets. And then later on that day, the Noel Gallagher official account tweet in response to that Liam thing, to whoever might be asked, I'm not aware of any offer from anybody for any amount of money to reform the legendary Mancunian rock and roll group Oasis. I am fully aware, though, that someone has a single to promote, so that's maybe where the confusion lies. Just to say quickly, Noel is the one promoting a single, not Liam. Liam's promoting an album or stroke EP and the video that Liam wants. So, yeah, okay, that's being pedantic, but just to clarify, that's the case. And, you know, it's great for both of them that he's done this. I mean, and Noel, if he didn't want that to be made a fuss of, he could have just not responded at all like he normally does. But he has chosen to respond. So it's also given, you know, that's then, you know, just searching Noel Gallagher in Google, Sky News, Huffington Post, Metro, all these outlets are going with it, you know, and it's all giving, it's all giving them Noel that publicity. So, you know, it's all good. It's all good publicity. Was there really 100 million? Probably not. Would people pay 100 million for them to do a tour? Well, probably yes. You know, I've not done a sort of a financial breakdown of what it might be worth. But I mean, in reality, there is a huge potential there for a massive earnings if they did an entire tour. You know, with the revenue streams that could be generated, it would be huge. 100 million? I don't know. That's a big number. But yeah, but feasibly that is possible for an entire world tour. But anyway, there we go. Let's dig into talking about the acoustic sessions and Blue Moon Rising and stuff with our good friend Chris from the Stage Left podcast. Let me find an empty meadow where the snow falls on the grass. Nothing real can ever fade from memory, but nothing lasts. Wonderful. Welcome back to the Stage Left podcast. No, that's the wrong one.
Freudian slip.
Welcome back to the Oasis podcast. Chris from the Stage Left podcast. How you doing, man?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a minute, that's for sure, since you've graced these halls.
Yeah, it has been a while. And yeah, just so much going on, I think, in each, you know, you're obviously, you know, getting some great people on, and you know, your listenership's huge now. And yeah, it's great to see. And I remember, I think I was like a guest on like the seventh episode or something like that. And
like something like that, pretty early. And then we did another. We did your full story, and then we did another one where we talked about, I think it was the release of
Wall of Glass.
It was, because you were saying, oh, there's something off in the drums or something like that. It was great to get that analysis from, you know, because obviously you know your stuff on Oasis and also being a musician as well. It's always good to get your insight. And it's been too long.
Yeah, I mean, I think since then I probably I've dipped in and out, and it's, yeah, no, you get some great people on. I think, have you got Charlie Lightning on this one as well? Yeah,
well, yeah, hopefully he's I dropped him a message when the video came out, because I spoke to him when the film came out. Which was great. He's a great guy. And and then I just dropped him a text and just said, you know, oh, the video with Eric is amazing, like, you know, it'd be good to catch up. And I think he was in New York, but I'm hoping to grab him early this week, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I mean, and over to you though. I mean, you've had some amazing people on, including a couple of people who've been over here before as well, like Jess and YZ, but not just that, like, you spoke to them over the phone like I did, they've just Nip Brown yours for a bit of food and a little gig as well, which is amazing. Do you want to just tell us about the Stage Left nights? That's sort of something that's new since we last spoke.
Yeah, that's right. So since we last spoke, I've tried to do more. So my output of podcast is probably... So firstly, for listeners who don't know, so Stage Left podcast is telling the stories of some of the unsung heroes behind the success to provide free educational content for young musicians. But out of, say, like, I think I've probably done like 75, 80 episodes, only I'd say 5 to 10% are kind of Oasis related. So we've had people from Radiohead, Kraftwerk, Guns N' Roses, Fleetwood Mac, that kind of thing. But I'm a massive Oasis fan, and I'm lucky to know quite well some of the people in both camps, if you like, Noel and Liam's camps, and lucky to have some great experiences. And one of the things that we set up recently is that I run run a night at the Groucho Club in Soho, which strictly is a members only event, but we do get like kind of 20 to 30 tickets each time for people to come along. And we had one last week, and YC played that. We had Jess play that with Gavin as well in the past. But we also have set up, me and my partner, I'm very lucky, my partner is an award-winning chef of kind of international acclaim. And we set up a business a couple of years ago now, well, no, probably 18 months ago, where she always wanted to do a supper club, which is essentially a 5-course meal in our lounge. Right. Where she does all the cooking. Like, I can't cook, so don't worry, you don't cook it, eat any of my food. And then we tried to think of an original twist. And so originally I was like, why don't I record an episode of the podcast and then, you know, sell the tickets to people who are fans of that person? And then we did the first one with John Wotham, the 1975. And he was like, oh, do you want me to play a set? And I was like, yeah. Right. And then just like, actually, why don't I just ask people if they're up for playing like a set in our lounge? And like everyone said yes. And so we've done kind of, I don't know, about 15 or 20 of them. And Jess played one of those. So, and probably people listening to this came to it. So we only have space for like 11 people, and that's including the artist. So you sit down next to the person and have this amazing, and I could talk about it objectively, the food, because I don't cook any of it, but you know, it is amazing, amazing food. And you sit with the artist, you can talk about them all night, you know, talk about whatever you want with them all night, and we put on vinyl records. And then between the fourth and fifth course, they'll play a set for like 25 minutes, 30 minutes, literally in touching distance because our lounge is tiny. So we've done like a number of those. I mean, we have people from like Radiohead, 1975, I said, and Noel's band, and loads more. So it's quite an intimate experience. We've got one coming up with, I don't know if any of your listeners ever saw the film Bohemian Rhapsody, but there's a really cool story behind. There was a band who were really critically acclaimed called Smile, which is a three-piece with a singer called Tim Staffel and Brian May and Roger Taylor. And Tim Staffel wanted to do kind of more proggy stuff, and he went, I'm actually going to go and do my own thing, but my classmate in graphic design is this guy called Freddie, you should get him in as singer. Now, the film doesn't quite tell it like that, because they dramatise it a bit. And anyway, so Tim's gone on to all this like other stuff and watched Queen become massive. But actually, a lot of Queen fans now, they don't want this new kind of Adam Lambert or Paul Rodgers thing. A lot of people say, actually, Queen should be reformed as Smile with Tim. And so he's got this real cult following, so he's going to be doing one in a couple of months. Jay Mailer's going to do one at some point, playing some songs as well. So, if anybody, you know, just check out our Instagram, stuff like that, to keep in the loop of it. So, it's quite a fun experience.
That's amazing. I keep meaning to get down to one of those things. I think the tricky thing is being outside of London and having kids and stuff. It's a little bit tricky, but that is amazing.
But if it's a special one, I mean, weirdly enough, we have, I mean, yes, kids and that is a tricky one, but like we have one person who comes from Sweden from each time, they fly in from Sweden. Wow. And that's because of my partner's cooking, by the way, they come for that. That's amazing. And like we have people from Dublin. And of course, if you're a big fan of someone, I mean, we've had some maybe not quite so well-known people who are like folk artists who in their circles are like, you know, legends, but you might not know them, particularly, you know, listens to this. And they're like if you get a chance to sit with them, we had someone turn up and just say, I thought I was going to be stitched up, and it was just like a joke, you know, because no one would believe me. I was sitting having dinner with them. So, people are willing to travel for it because of it's quite a unique experience. So Jess is going to be doing another one. Jay Maid is going to do one. I think YC is definitely going to do one as well. And we've got one with Tim Staffel coming up as well, the guy from who was pre-Queen.
Fantastic. That's amazing, mate. That is quality. Cool. Well, I'm really pleased that's going well. And the podcast's still going strong as well. You got any more irons in the fire over that way?
Yeah, so we've got Ed Harcourt. I don't know if any of you are...
I remember Ed Harcourt. Yeah. Early 2000s, new acoustic movement. So I said, I don't mind if I lose, because if I win, I'll be so confused. But that's not what you'd expect.
Well, I had a very embarrassing... I was at a wedding recently. It was the wedding of the drummer of Radiohead and Portishead, a guy called Clive Dima, who's been on the podcast. And I was chatting to this guy all night, and he said, "Oh, Clive played on my record recently." And then it was only at the end of the night. I went, "Oh, what's it going to be called?" And he went, "Oh, Ed Harcourt." And I went, "Are you Ed Harcourt?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Fuck, I'm so sorry." And he basically has completely changed. He went, "No, I've changed my image." It was a deliberate thing. So he's coming on. Jeff Barrow, who was in Portishead as well, he DJ'd at that wedding, actually, which was insane, yeah. Steve Hamilton's going to be coming on. So he is Noel's sax player and plays with Madness, and he's done actually stuff with Queen as well, and played with loads of people. He's going to come on. That should be quite interesting. He wrote the brass part for Wandering Star, which you hear on the live version. But then I think Noel stripped it out for the for the main version. We've got a member of Elbow coming up. And the live ones, we've got at the Groucho, we've got Lightning Seeds playing it again, and John Woff from 1975. So we've got some good nights coming up, so people should get involved if they want to.
That is amazing, mate. That is brilliant. All right, well, should we have a chat about what's been going on in the world of the Gallagher Brothers this week? Because it's been a nuts week. And it's hard to feel sorry for multimillionaire genius Noel Gallagher. But sometimes I do feel sorry for him. So, for instance, Noel Gallagher comes back, new song, new video, featuring like one of the hottest young actors in the world, probably, Jack O'Connell. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, this is going to be a big buzz. And then out of nowhere, Liam turns up with Eric Cantona and an entire bloody, well, whether it's an album or an EP, you know, this acoustic sessions thing. And it's like, boom, you know what I mean? It's like, wow, okay.
What's your thoughts on the timings of those releases?
Well, I actually put this out on Twitter, and I did like a little poll and said, you know, what is happening here? Number one, is this a absolute coincidence? And obviously there's loads of releases this week. So it's clearly Christmas is done, January's done, now we're back into the, you know, the mainstream releases. So there is an argument to say it's a coincidence. The other one is it's a complete stitch-up in the background between the two record companies and management companies, that they're all talking to each other and saying, okay, you do this, we'll do this, because it just makes sense for them to both come out at the same time, right? It gets more press. It mm-hmm. always makes sense. And if you track the solo careers, Chasing Yesterday was slightly off with timing, but they've pretty much done albums in the same years. Mm-hmm. Or is it Noel's got this date planned and then Liam jumps in? Or is it the other way? You know, Liam's got that date planned and so Noel's people quickly jump in beforehand. I don't know. I think it's hard to say. The fact that Liam's stuff absolutely came from nowhere sort of did surprise me. You know, because you would think that you might have known with your contacts within Liam's band, but to not have a clue that we're getting this like video with Eric and then a whole bloody acoustic sessions album. I mean, I was really taken aback. What about you?
Yes, well, firstly, it's great. I mean, what a time to be alive that we get two lots of releases. So I think we're the ones benefiting from it. The answer is I don't know. I reckon the video was turned around very quickly because of the Eric Cantona, I think was it Christmas Day or a couple of days after Christmas, released that video of him listening to Once, you know, drunken with a, you know, around Christmas. And I reckon it was a case of, like, let's get onto him and let's do a video for it. I might be wrong. The answer is I don't know. I'm sure I'll find out at some point. The acoustic sessions, I think, were recorded around the MTV Unplugged shows, I think. I remember being in Rack Studios and doing an interview for the Stage Left podcast with someone called Izzy Gracefield. And at the end, I don't know if any, you know, your listeners may or may not have been in there, but it's a really beautiful studios where the main room is, the lighting in there is incredible. And I went, oh, can we get a photo in there of me and her? You know, when you've met people on the podcast, you get a photo at the end so you can put it as the photo. And she went, yeah, sure, I'll take you out. And she went, just let me check on who's playing in there. And she had the Excel spreadsheet up. And she went, oh, no, we can't go in there. And it was like Liam Gallagher for 2 weeks, actually. So I don't know if they were doing it for 2 weeks, because that probably seems, so maybe they were recording some other stuff at the time. So I didn't get a chance to go in there. But no, I just think it's great. I think it could be any of those hypotheses. The answer is I don't know. But, you know, I like stuff. I mean, it's interesting with, I had to keep it under my hat from about March last year, but I heard all of Noel's EPs, a version of, and they weren't demos. They were the, it was so when a band's in a studio at the end of the day, often you just do a rough mix to take away and listen to afterwards. And so I heard like Blue Moon Rising, Rattling Rose, Evil Flower, When I heard Wandering Star, I remember thinking, holy fuck, Oasis fans are going to shit their pants because Noel's done a Christmas song. But I remember thinking, oh, what beautiful melody it was. And actually, it was slightly different. It was much more Christmassy. So when it came out, I was like, oh, the world's going to, you know, Oasis world is going to melt at the fact that, you know, there's a Christmas song. But actually, it was a bit more of a hint of Christmas sleigh bells, whereas the version I heard was like proper Christmassy. So they obviously stripped stuff away, and obviously they stripped away Steve's brass part on it as well. And then I heard Come On Outside as well, which is almost exactly the same as the demos you would have heard. It's slightly different tempo, but it's very similar. Okay. Yeah, so I heard all that, and I remember just thinking, I've got to keep this under my hat from about March. But I remember wondering, I know you were asking about Blooming Rising, and I do like all those ones, but I remember having heard all of those ones and then Wandering Star, it's like really stuck out. It's like a classic Noel kind of capo on second fret, like melody in that. And that was that was the song that really stood out to me out of those pool of songs. And like Liam's absolutely nailing it with those vocals. I mean, I did a tweet saying, you know, it's his most youthful vocal for like 25 years. And I think everyone can hear that. The one thing I need to find out, and I will find out sometime, is why Stand By Me ends the way it does. So
it's very abrupt, isn't it? I think that's one of the things that really sticks out. I think because it did, because it does that on the MTV Unplugged version, and I think it did that on the live version that we was doing.
What, they didn't do the last chorus? Because on this version, it's like it cuts out of the middle eight. The way it's gonna be. They cut it up a bit, but maybe I do know that it's thought that some of the songs do go on a bit too long with quite long guitar solos and that kind of thing, and they do try and strip them down so it's mainly just focusing on Liam's part. So maybe they thought it didn't need all that extra bit, but yeah, that was one thing that stuck out to me. But I mean, Cast No Shadow, just so glad to hear those songs again. I mean, Sad Song is one of my favourite ever Oasis songs, so for Liam to nail that was like raised an eyebrow, but like it was he's absolutely done it beautifully. You know,
the arrangement is beautiful as well. The next person we've got on is Chris Elliott, who did the strings on Why Me, Why Not. And when I heard the MTV Unplugged stuff, I thought, wow, those strings are like it's on Sad Song, Cast No Shadow, you know, because they've added in so much extra stuff, all these cellos, and it's amazing. And it's nothing to do with him. He doesn't know who did it. I'm assuming it's sort of whoever was musical director for the MTV Unplugged show. But yeah, I really adds to it. It takes it up a notch. If you're needing something I can give, I know I'd help you if I can. If you're honest and you say that you did, you know that I would give you my hand. The one thing I'm not as strong on personally is the female backing vocals.
Right.
Personally, like the Cast No Shadow theming backing, and obviously they didn't do Acquiesce, but the Acquiesce live ones, I probably prefer the male backing. I just think there's something in a male, well, it's just that we want to repeat what Oasis had, right? That's what we want. But I don't think there's anyone that Liam holds in high enough esteem to say, okay, you take that such an important part as the sort of answering vocal on something like Cast No Shadow.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is, Cast No Shadow is ridiculously high. I mean, Dan does sing the, I remember when Dan McDougall's drummer came on the podcast and he'd just been, like, the night before they did the Brit Awards, they did an acoustic version, and Liam just turned to him and said, Dan, can you sing the falsetto bit? You and I can live forever, and just repeat it. And he does sing it really nicely, and he's done it quite a number of times since. So, yeah, I mean, Dan is a brilliant singer. He's an unbelievable all-round musician who Liam, I think... He looks to Dan a lot, and I think he sees him as his rock in his band. Absolutely. Dan is the man in that band in regards to keeping everything together and finding all the samples. And, you know, he's the person who... I think if you look at Liam's career, he's always, you know, he's obviously he's got very strong ideas of what he wants. But because, by his own admittance, musically, he hasn't... You know, he's not the greatest guitarist, or, like, technically, he's not... Like, he probably maybe has a challenge in explaining exactly what he wants using the technical language of music. And he's always looked to other people. So, like, that's why, like... So, firstly, it was Noel, and then in BDI, it would be Gem and Andy. And he kind of lost that. And absolutely, in that band, Dan is the person that he looks to. And you know, a lot of musicians who do that job, their role is to interpret what the singer wants or what the request is and go, OK, right. I get what it is that you want. And Dan's very much that. And so he is an absolutely, like, critical member of that band. And he's a brilliant all-round musician and singer. Maybe they just felt that it needs to be a bit more oomph in regards to... I remember messaging Christian after the... Christian's his keyboardist, and just saying when they did the BBC show on, it was like a live lounge thing they did like last summer, and they did Once and Champagne Supernova. I was like, the backing vocals, like, you've got to keep them, because we all know sometimes Liam can have the off night. And if you look at a lot of older singers, they often have female backing vocals singing with them to kind of just, like, carry them through, like, lift it a little bit. And you know, I said that if Liam could, you know, if they can afford it, which I'm sure they can, if they had female singers all the way through, Liam would be, like, absolutely nailing it. But what he's done in the past is that he's exposed himself on nights he's not, that you know, quite on song, and that's really noticeable because he's had no backing vocals. So if you look at, like, even, like, you know, Tony Bennett and, like, really old Frank Sinatra, like, really older singers, they've a lot of them all would have, like, female backing singers singing with him. And I just think that's something Liam should do going forward. But I hear where you're coming from. It doesn't quite sound the same, but maybe it shouldn't sound the same, because then we wouldn't have anything to miss.
He walks along the open road of love and life, surviving if he can.
Kind of jumped around a bit, but let's go into Blue Moon Rising. I mean, what's your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I like it. I like the fact Noel is stretching himself, and I think that's where Noel is at his happiest. I mean, many of your listeners would have gone to, like, Oasis gigs in, like, the 2000s, and it always struck me that Noel, if you know, maybe you can find it when you look at videos, Noel just looked quite an unhappy person. He just, on stage, he just did not look creatively fulfilled. He just looked miserable, like he didn't want to be there the whole time. And at the time, I thought I was just, because he's just playing it cool, and he's really wanting, you know, he's just being a cool dude. But actually, I think now he doesn't really care what people think, and he's doing the music that makes him happy. And, like, you know, good luck to him. And I like it. I mean, you know, I always struggle a little bit when there is such an obvious nod to someone or something. So, like, you know, he's done songs in the past where it's like, okay, that's obviously a New Order influence, and then this song is obviously obviously Kate Bush, you know, there's definitely a link to Kate Bush in this one. And the only reason I have an issue with that is that I don't think Noel needs it. I think he's, like, such a genius, brilliant artist. I don't think he needs to do those nods. But, you know, he obviously has his reasons for doing that. But, yeah, I like it. It's good. It's different. And I'm just glad that he's stretching himself, because I think the reason why he was unhappy in Oasis in those, you know, in the 2000s was that it was just kind of, you know, Marshall amps and doing the same thing, standing stage left, playing a few guitar solos. Sure. And he's just nowhere near as fulfilled as he is in a solo career, which is why I just can't see them reforming anytime soon. But I might be wrong, but I just can't see it happening, because why would he need to?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a funny one. I don't think it's as strong as, you know, a couple of the other ones in this overall style. I mean, this kind of, it's funny, we say, oh, he's looking forwards. Well, he's kind of sounding 80s, you know, so it's not really, he's looking like 20 years further forward than he used to when he was mainly trying to sound like he was from 65. He's now sounding 85, but I don't think this song is quite as strong as, say, Black Star Dancing or Rattling Rose. I think it's just a couple of the other bits, like it specifically that people have pointed out and I spotted, is the melody in the verse is a bit Stand By Me, so you know, which is, you know, which he kind of does, he cribs a little bit. It's not so noticeable, it's obvious, but I think it's definitely there.
When the night has come and the land is dark.
That weird noise in it, I can't quite place it, that kind of gong noise through it. Is it like, it's a bit like Thriller, or it's a bit like, say, like Running Up That Hill, or there's this, I thought it was almost like Adamski as well, you know, there was something, there's a sort of a very interesting percussion, and the soundscape itself is really good. One thing I think that I found weird about it is, you have that the intro and then the verse melody repeats a couple of times, and we don't get into that You Make Me Feel Electric part until almost 2 minutes into the song. And it really takes a while to get to that point. And then when we get that bit, which I really like that bit of melody, and we get that kind of plays through twice, and then we go back to the verse melody briefly, and then it ends. And that's such a strange structure for a song. You know, as a songwriter yourself, it's like verse, verse, chorus, chorus, half a verse.
But that's probably, you know, the exact reason he's done it. Like, literally, he's probably looked at and gone, okay, so what will people expect? Verse, chorus, middle eight, double chorus, outro.
Yeah.
And like what you just described there is everything I think he wants to achieve. I think he wants to challenge the listener. I think he wants people to question and go, oh, why has he done it that way? And why are we finishing on like a little verse or something like that? And but look at Roll With It. Roll With It starts with a chorus. Very unusual. Yeah. But yeah, it's, I think at the moment he's probably just looking at what, you know, his output over the years, which is all fantastic, and just going, okay, let's rip up the rule book a little bit that he very much defined in an era, really. And doing things differently just to see what happens. And I think he can take risks on an EP. I mean, I have no idea why he's releasing it as an EP, but my thinking is that you can get away with more on an EP, because if it turns out to be absolutely shit, it can get lost in history a little bit. EP slip through the net a little bit, rather than, and I might be wrong about that, but yeah, he's taking risks, and good for him. I like it, you know. I need to hear stuff that challenges me and stretches me a little bit. And, you know, one accusation of the Gallagher Brothers for years is that they haven't tried to pursue that as much as they could have done. And it's just good that it's happening now. And it's interesting. It's, you know, it's you know, my one of my favourite bands ever apart from Oasis is Radiohead. And the reason for that is you can listen to some of their records, and each time you listen to it, you hear something different. And that kind of keeps us interested. And, you know, I think you can say that about some of Noel's new stuff, even if it is a little bit perhaps unconventional.
Fair enough. What did you think of the video, Liam and Eric Cantona?
I loved it. I can't believe there was genuinely people who were like really upset that Liam had put it up. Maybe that was just like a Daily Mail article that was just like to stir things up. But was there really people?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a few idiots on Twitter, but you know, like Eric is. He's such an icon, but he goes beyond Man United. You know, it's like, and also let's not forget, Liam used to wash his car. Yep. You know what I mean? Like Liam used to actually wash his car. That's not like a euphemism. Mm-hmm. He actually did, you know. And like, you know, I've interviewed the Biggin before, you know, who did the, who was there in the early days and got Liam the job car washing at Man United.
Yeah.
And yeah, he sort of pointed out like, yeah, from.
There was that story I think it was Tony McCowell's book, where he said that when one day they were washing Mark Hughes's car, and they said to Liam, go up to his front door and give him the, like, the receipt. And as Liam went to the front door, Mark Hughes opened it, and Liam didn't realise they'd written on it, I really like your curly hair. Yeah. And basically, like, they threw Liam under the bus, which is brilliant. So, Cantona, I mean, I genuinely have always, and I'm not just saying it because of the last week, I genuinely always love Cantona, the collar up, you know, such a cool dude. In fact, I was watching after the Instagram post he did, I was actually been watching like YouTube, like compilations of Eric Cantona since then. So to see he was doing this video, my feeling is they maybe Liam saw it as a bit of an open goal. It's like, wow, okay, we've had like, that kind of, what's it, like rubber stamping of approval from someone so cool. Let's call him up and ask him if he's up for doing a quick video. And, you know, if you speak to Charlie Lightning, he might say it differently, but I think that's probably what happened. And I absolutely loved it. I love the fact that it looks like it's in one take. I don't know if there's any clever editing, but it looks like it's in one take. I love the fact that the humility of Liam, that he's the butler and the chauffeur and that kind of stuff was brilliant. So, yeah, good on him. It was great.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, Cantona's my favourite player, other than George Best. But in my lifetime, Cantona was my favourite player. Like, absolutely, you know, obsessed with that guy. And, you know, so in the mid-90s, the pictures on my wall were Cantona and Liam, like, literally next to each other. And so for me, just to have the two of them combined was just a magic thing for me.
And timing-wise, so it was, like, only the day before that there was, like, articles saying that it was 25 years ago to the day that he'd done the kung fu kick at Selhurst Park. And it was like, oh, wow. And they managed to release a video around the same time. So it's just, like, the traction for it and the amount of views and stuff like that is great. And that song deserves it. I actually say, you know, my view on Why Me, Why Not, if you're interested, is that... I will take, I'm happy to kind of the trade-off these days where I accept that there's never going to be an album as good as any of the early really Oasis songs, the early Oasis albums, but if you can get one tune in there which is as good as any early Oasis song, I'll take that. And I honestly think Once could sit along anything on the first two albums easily. I think Once is absolutely incredible, and that's what happens when you partner up with an Oscar winning songwriter, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll do it. You get that voice of Liam Gallagher and an Oscar winning songwriter, you are gonna have a hit, and he's done really well.
I completely agree, Chris. Wonderful, mate. It's been really good to catch up. It shouldn't be so long next time. I think it's been maybe less than 2 years next time.
Yeah, let's do it again. It's been good fun.
Nice one. All right, buddy. Thanks so much for your time, mate. And speak again very soon. And good luck with the upcoming nights.
Cheers. Stay young and invincible.
But oh, I remember you used to shine back then. You went down so easy like a glass of wine, my friend. When the dawn came up, you felt so inspired to do it again. But we were wrong. You only get to do it once.
And we're back. Thank you very much to Chris. Make sure you're checking Chris out on the Stage Left podcast. And maybe one of those Stage Left nights. Sounds good. I must have to get down there. Right. So now we're also going to cross over to Ben Burrell. So yeah, this was very cool because Ben dropped this Standing on the Shoulder of Giants podcast episode, and I messaged him and I'd said, like, you know, it's really good. You know, did you want to do a quick phone call to sort of help promote it, help plug it, make you guys aware of it? Because I think it's definitely worth checking out. And he said, well, do you want to come into the Absolute Radio studios and record in here? So that'd be fantastic. I don't remember, a while back I recorded up at, with Colin Patterson. We went to Five Live in Salford. That was really good. But to go to Absolute Radio was a real treat. And it was fantastic. Quick word of warning. I didn't quite get my head around the setup of the microphones. And so I was nowhere near my microphone. So I sound quite quiet throughout this, which is quite annoying. But anyway, I've tried to fix it a little bit. But anyway, you don't need to hear me. I'm not very interesting. You hear enough of me. The main thing is you can hear Ben very well. So anyway, enjoy this. This is me with Ben Burrell, and we're talking news and 20th anniversary of Standing on the Shoulder of Giants.
This is Absolute Radio.
All right. Well, welcome to the Oasis podcast, Ben Burrell.
Thank you.
How you doing, man?
Yeah, good. How are you?
I'm good. This is cool. This is nice.
Well, we're in a basement in Soho, so I don't know. Is that nice? it's not bad.
I don't know what you got planned for me. I had the door locked as I came in, so that's all right. But just let people know we're at sort of Absolute Radio headquarters, which is very cool. I think, yeah, I don't know if we're supposed to be here. We might get turfed out in a minute. But
just don't mention it. It's fine.
Don't mention it. So we're not at Absolute Radio headquarters. We're somewhere else, undisclosed location. But yeah, so Ben, I'm a big fan of your Long Player Pod.
Thanks.
Which I think is really, really good stuff. And I wasn't aware of it, to be honest, until it was drawn to my attention with the Standing on the Shoulder of Giants one you did a couple of episodes ago, which I thought was absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, it's still very new. It's only about 2 months old, I think. Yeah.
Cool. And what was it in particular? Because you've done Radiohead and you've done Led Zepp and you've done all these other ones. Why in particular go back to Standing on the Shoulder of Giants?
Well, I'm a massive Oasis fan for a start. They are my favourite band, and they're the band that kind of got me into music. And there was for a good 10 years in my early teens through to my early 20s, I guess, where I wouldn't even like another band or another artist unless they were Oasis approved. Which I don't know why that happened, but
I know what you mean. I get that.
So yeah, I'm a big Oasis fan, and I felt like that album, like the whole of the second half of the career of Oasis, in my opinion, is fascinating because there's lots to it apart from the music. There's lots of right. What could have beens and why didn't they do this and why is that like that?
Yeah.
There's lots of questions around it, which I hope makes for a good podcast episode.
It is a fascinating album. I've always looked at it. I kind of visualize Oasis because there were 7 studio albums, and I don't count the Master Plan. And you've got kind of obviously the first three, like, and then you've got which is with Bonehead and Gwigs.
Yeah.
And then you've got the last three, which is with Andy and Gem. And then you kind of have this weird...
Yeah, it's like a strange like halfway house where three band members for all intents and purposes.
I know, it's so strange that it's kind of there in the middle and it's just this such this weird transition album. Plus as well, you've got the fact it's a come-down album. You know, it's a come-down album off drugs and as well. So it's... and I think what you've captured in the episode you did in it is that... Yeah, there's all that weird stuff going on in it, and there's the kernel of what could be their OK Computer, or what could have been their sort of next step into something really different, but it didn't quite reach those heights.
No, but actually, you saying that makes it even more frustrating because it's like they had this opportunity where they'd made those three albums, and there was that lineup change, and they could have done anything, and I think they probably knew that they were going to get regular band members in, and I know that already started to happen, but I think they probably thought, well, we'll go back to that sort of setup of being a normal band with a proper band lineup.
Yeah.
But it makes it even more frustrating that album, they just didn't think, fuck it, let's do what we want, let's go for it.
I know.
Which sort of half happened but didn't quite happen.
Not quite there. So you get the scratch at the start of Go Let Out.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, there's a record scratch on the Oasis.
Yeah, which I remember hearing for the first time and thinking, wow, that's weird.
Yeah,
and thinking like, what are they doing? Like, what's this going to happen? I thought we were going to get a rap halfway through.
Yeah, like a Linkin Park album.
Yeah,
because Linkin Park was big at the time.
I mean, yeah, that would have been terrible, but I mean, thank God that didn't happen.
We no illusion. Try to click with what you got. Taste every potion. Cause if you like yourself a lot, go let it out.
It's so weird that the quality control, that's the thing for me, is it's just strange that it's an album by this band that I know they had a bit of a dip from where they were in sort of 96. But still, this is like one of the biggest bands in the world coming out with a new album. And yet they only go in with 10 tracks, including Little James, which I know some people like it, but... it's not great, you know. And
I was surprised people. I said, so my day job is I present on a radio station. We play lots of guitar music and people are quite knowledgeable. Our listeners are quite knowledgeable about guitar music. And I said on air, I didn't like Little James, thinking that everyone would go, yep, you're right. But the vitriol, but yeah, people were saying, I love it. It's my favourite Liam song. I sat there thinking, I'm questioning everything now. I don't know what to believe anymore. For me, it's not. It's not good.
No. But if, like, you know, if a mate of yours was like, "Oh, I've written a song,"
yeah,
and he played you that, yeah, he'd be like, "Yeah,
cool,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, yeah, keep at it, mate." You know? But yeah, I think it was almost like a Noel kind of a knowing. Yeah, all right then, Liam, we'll put it on the album.
Yeah, I think it is very much a, well, we'll put this on the album and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Like, we'll see where you go with this. And I think it was, in hindsight, it was the right decision because if they'd have said no, Liam might have never written another song.
Yeah, true.
And we did, like, latter day, Liam compositions were great. Yeah. And I think his solo career, I know he's obviously got a team of songwriters and there's been a big deal made out of that. But there's songs that he's written in his solo career that are him and have come from him. And they're good songs. And absolutely, I don't think we wouldn't have got that without the terror of Little James.
But then also, you know, you have... I remember when the album came out and Noel said, I think, like, on the NME, like, on the front cover, it said, Noel Gallagher, new album, new Oasis album is 8 out of 10. And it's because he'd said, like, 8 tracks are good, including Liam's one. 2 of them are rubbish.
But wasn't that the case for, like, the last... I don't know, 4 albums?
Yeah.
He'd always be like, oh, we had this good song and Liam missed a studio session and it would have been worth another star in Q magazine, which he was right. Like, but to know that, I always used to think, can we just please get it together? Like, can we just have like a real classic album?
I know.
Because I always felt there was the ingredients there ready to go for almost every album from Standing on the Shoulder of Giants onwards.
Absolutely.
But
I mean, one of the things
we did
in the maybe kind of reassembled episode, and I think we'll do it for Morning Glory this year, and you could probably do it for Standing on the Shoulder as well, is if you were there at the time and could merge the album. So we're definitely maybe, you know, for me, I would have dropped, like, I got into a lot of trouble for it, but I would have dropped Columbia and I would have put in Cloudburst, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Wow, that's a big decision.
I mean... But whereas on Standing on the Shoulder of Giants, you know, you could have easily binned... you know, put your money where your mouth is and put in Let's All Make Believe, you know.
Yeah.
Or there's various other songs that were around at the time that then, you know, were recorded later and put out by Noel and things like that. And there was the ability to, they could have made it, you know, a really strong 12-track album. And yet it's almost like, oh, come on, guys, try harder. You know
but
what I mean?
I always felt, and I felt this with, like, Dig Out Your Soul and Don't Believe the Truth, maybe not Heathen Chemistry, but certainly those last two records, I always felt like, as you just said, the songs were there and they almost made decisions that were like trolling the fan base.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to include that song on there. We won't do that. Like, I love Idler's Dream. I think that's really a great song. And I think if John Lennon had written that, then people would say it's one of the greatest songs he'd written.
Yeah.
I never did say and I wish I could. I never could pray because it's just no good.
Why that never made it onto an album? I know the recording's a little bit dodgy and it's a little twee in places, a little twee. But I thought if they put that just somewhere on the album, just to break up a little, that'd have been great. And like songs like One Way Road and like Solve My Mystery, the demo of was great. And the demo's like basically ready to go.
Same song.
So it wasn't like they recorded the demo and thought, we haven't got time to do this. It's like the song's there, it's ready to go.
I know.
But they still, for whatever reason, I don't know who was in charge of quality control. And I don't know if it was maybe it was a label thing, maybe. I don't know, but there's some weird decisions in those, like, 10 years of Oasis, odd decisions.
I think it's Noel. I think my understanding is it's Noel. I know when I'm talking to McGee, it's like, for the first album, McGee was able to say, no, I think you should do this, and Noel was willing to listen. But then by the time he gets to, you know, even Acquiesce should be the comeback single, not Some Might Say. But by that time, it's Noel Gallagher who sold 8 million records.
Yeah,
and he's like, no, Alan, it's going to be...
And I guess if he has built that debut album
and
he's written those songs, you're going to listen to him. You're not going to say no because he's the cash cow.
Exactly.
But but even going back to the Morning Glory days, like, I think Acquiesce would have been the perfect comeback single.
Yeah.
I even think if they'd have just held on to that and the Master Plan and a couple of other B-sides from the Morning Glory era, I mean, there's Be Here Now, ready to go. I mean, I love Be Here Now, but I think if you throw those songs on it, it's like, it's their best album.
Exactly. Absolutely.
It's quite frustrating being an Oasis fan, isn't it?
It's like, but it's so weird though, because it doesn't really happen like that with other bands, you know, like that just attitude of like, yeah, whatever, that'll do. Whereas, you know, if you're a football team, it's not like they'll say, all right, well, that person hasn't turned up, or so we'll just stick on you. You know, it just wouldn't happen.
I know.
You get it proper, you do it properly. Whereas they just had this attitude of like, yeah, that'll do. It's such a weird attitude.
But I do think that was the beauty of Oasis in some ways, that they were, I mean, a lot of rock and roll, for want of a better phrase, is riddled with bands that are trying to be authentic.
Yeah.
And you rarely get an authentic band, but I think Oasis really were that. They, you know, in interviews they literally said what they want. There was no, they had PR people obviously, but they weren't really PR managed. And we see, like, in this building we get bands in all the time, and you can tell that they're just so bland, and I know it's an obvious thing to say that, but they're so manufactured. Whereas Oasis, like, literally they were in charge of their careers. Yeah. I mean, there were people around them that were called managers, but it was, for the most part, Noel.
Yeah.
And that's quite incredible. And that's quite unusual to have that. I mean, I mean, the Arctic Monkeys probably the only band that even come close to that. And even then, they're quite, you know, severely managed. But
yeah. And I suppose they're not deliberately, you know, being aggressive or, you know, deliberately being obtuse like Oasis would be. And that was part of it, you know, like the famous story of, you know, Noel phones McGee and says, we got chucked off the fell, you know, we got arrested. Yeah. And he says, bloody brilliant. Well, effing brilliant. I can swear. It's my own podcast. What am I doing? I'm just going to be in the radio studio.
I know, it feels weird. It doesn't feel right.
But yeah, so, you know, that's the thing. It was like, yeah, brilliant. Shock sells. And that's one of the things I found frustrated with the current crop of bands is it's like, you know, yeah, I'm really pleased that the 1975 want to save the planet, but Christ, it's boring.
Yeah, it is.
You know
it is
boring.
Mean?
Why can't you get chucked out of a club at 3 a.m. and, like, you know?
But also, I'm sure the 1975 do want to save the planet, and I'm not having a go at them. But I feel like that's a very good marketing technique as well. That they're a conscious band about the planet and social issues. Whereas I think Oasis would be honest. If someone tried to talk to Noel about saving the planet, I mean, if he cared about it, I'm sure he'd talk about it at length.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, I'm sure he'd say, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you probably wouldn't get with other bands.
Well, taking it back, Ben, so when did you... So I think you're probably a bit younger than me. So when did Oasis hit you? At what age and where are you geographically?
When Definitely Maybe came out, I was 7, so I didn't get into it until years later. So the first time I can really remember, my brother got me into them. So my brother's 4 years older, so he was sort of around about that time. So I remember distinctly hearing Live Forever, and he had the CD single. And I remember being fascinated by the lyric about morning rain. I don't know why, but I always thought that's like that for some reason that stuck out at me. I don't know why. Even to this day, I couldn't tell you why. But I remember thinking that's an intriguing lyric. So, but that must have been quite late on. That must have been like 96, maybe. So I guess that he was maybe a couple of years too late or something. But the first time I really remember listening to the albums was we were driving to Glasgow for New Year. My dad was driving. My brother and his friend were in the back with me. And they had songs from Morning Glory and songs from Definitely Maybe. I don't think it was the entire albums, but they split the tape. So some of the songs from Definitely Maybe were on the first side.
Yeah.
Some of the songs from Morning Glory on the B side or second side. And I remember listening to that and thinking, wow, these are like really good pop songs, really good pop songs. Yeah. And it was quite a long drive. I'm from London, but we were living in Somerset at the time. So it was quite a long drive up to Loch Lomond we were going to. So it was a long car journey. So I just listened to them kind of on repeat and really got into them. And then I became obsessed with Morning Glory. And it was like the only thing I'd listen to. And every morning I'd wake up, get dressed for school, and I'd play the bits of Morning Glory from sort of a Roll With It through to Hey Now. For some reason, I became obsessed with that part of the album. Oh, wow, I think it's because Don't Look Back in Anger is my favourite song of all time. So I think just so I could hear that as much as possible without it becoming boring and repeating it again and again and again. And then after that obsession, I bought Standing on the Shoulder of Giants. That must have been around 2000 time.
Yeah.
I remember listening to that at my nan and granddad's house. and thinking, what the fuck, there's a choir on it? What are they thinking? Like, this is not what I signed. Yeah. What is this?
Weird. So weird.
But actually thinking, I quite like it. And that's where my obsession with that album began. Yeah. And then we moved from Somerset to the South Coast. I moved around quite a bit. And because I moved when I was about 16, I guess. And because when you're 16, you move somewhere new, you've got no friends, and it's the end of the entire world. So I just spent all my time listening to music. And it was great, actually, because it was like 2003, so all those bands were starting to come through.
Oh, okay. Like that wave of
that. Yeah, the Strokes were, I guess, one of the biggest bands in the world at that point, just released their second album. And like the Libertines was just starting to come through, and it was a couple of years off the Arctic Monkeys. And I became obsessed with Definitely Maybe. I mean, I knew it as an album, and I knew every single song inside out. But I, for some reason, rediscovered that album and I fell in love with it all over again. And because I'd listened to it intermittently over like the previous 2 years, for some reason, listening to it every single day just suddenly clicked in my head as, oh my God, this is like, how did I not realise this was the greatest album of all time? Like before, I was like, oh, I like it, but Morning Glory is my favourite album. But yeah, I fell in love with Definitely Maybe, and it was quite a nice time as well because of that, I discovered like Nevermind the Bollocks and... Right. The first two Clash, or first three Clash albums. And then a couple of years after that, it was Don't Believe the Truth time and the kind of resurgence of Oasis. So it was really, for me, it was a really exciting time for music because guitar bands were having that renaissance that has now absolutely collapsed.
Well, I mean, it was. I mean, like when you think back, like Franz Ferdinand and then Kaiser Chiefs and then like Hardfi, and there's all those bands that sold millions. And it was, I did an interview with the guy from Sargent. Who supported Oasis on the last tour, and like The View had made it
from
The View had made it like a couple of years before, and it was literally like the last wave of bands. All those bands did like great first albums and then basically all got dropped, you know, or they did do a second album and got dropped, and it was really basically they recorded an album but then got dropped straight away, because by the time it got to like 2009, like mainstream radio had just completely moved away from indie music. And so they were knackered, really. And it hasn't, and that's been the same ever since. Like,
you know. It's a shame. And I think, you know, one of the great things about Oasis was their timing. I mean, obviously, I wasn't around to consciously understand it in 93, 94, but, you know, they came along at the right time when guitar music needed a big band and a band like Oasis. Yeah. And now is that time once again. And, I work for a company that also published Q magazine, which obviously is quite a big Oasis-friendly magazine. And the editor we had in the other day, and he was talking about Oasis, and he said, we've never needed a band like Oasis more than we need them now. Maybe not Oasis to get that together, because I don't think that will particularly help. But we need a new band like Oasis to come and, you know, kick the door down and have these amazing songs and have this amazing kind of attitude that can... rejuvenates guitar music. That's the thing, like, I think major labels don't particularly want to touch guitar music at the moment until we get that band that breaks through. And there's a hunger for it. I mean, you know, 70,000 people in the summer with me watched Neil Young and Bob Dylan, and you know, they're rock musicians, for want of a better phrase, maybe, but you know, there's still a hunger for it.
Absolutely.
And there's no new acts coming through to fill that void, but hopefully.
It's shocking. But there we go. Wonderful. What else are we going to talk about? Oh, yeah. Well, so suddenly, like, from everything having been completely quiet for the last sort of couple of months, you know, with Christmas and everything, and then the last week, suddenly, we're all like, oh, it's all kicked off again. And, like, literally with no... You know, I thought you're supposed to get build up to these things, you know, like, you know, in the movie world, you get trailers and you get like TV.
It's not like that anymore.
And it's just like, boom, dropped, you know, Noel single. Okay. And then boom, dropped Liam video with Eric Cantona. What? And then,
which is great. I think.
Which is amazing.
One of the best Oasis related videos
in
years. I mean, they've never been particularly great.
No, well, they don't enjoy doing them. But, you know, I think that was, you know, I mean, for me, just to pick up on that, like, you know, I grew up as a Man United fan in the 90s because I'm from Oxfordshire, so of course I was a Man United fan in the 90s.
Unbelievable.
and Cantona was my hero. So, you know, on my wall, I had Cantona and Liam.
Yeah.
So to see that, I mean, and when Cantona did that little Instagram video of singing along to Once
at
Christmas, and then, you know, and you're like, oh, you know, Eric loves Liam's stuff. This is amazing. And then I think, I'm hoping to interview Charlie Lightning in the next couple of days, and I assume what's happened is that they've seen that and said, get him.
Yeah.
You know, and then because they never did a video for once. So
he can't actually be busy. I mean, what is Cantona up to these days?
Cantona's a renaissance man. He does everything. He does, you know, he's like, anyway, he's just the best.
But I can't think of a better foil for Liam. I mean, absolutely. Imagine going out drinking with those two.
Oh, well, this is the thing. You know, people always have that, like, who would be your dream dinner party guest?
Yeah.
Mine are, like, Cantona and Liam. They're the first two names on the list, you know, straight away.
That would be carnage, though.
Yeah, oh, it would be carnage. God, that's just the one. That would be the greatest night of all time, I think.
Yeah.
To be with those two. But anyway, so how have you kind of, what was your view on the Noel song and also the Liam album?
Well, I like both their solo careers. I'm a little bit more Noel than Liam. But what I like about Liam is that I feel like Liam's solo career it's basically, I think, what we would have got with a modern day Oasis album. Yeah. I think especially songs like Wall of Glass, even though they sound different to Oasis, I think they're from the same wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I feel like if they'd gone back into studio, you know, 5-10 years after their split or whatever, then they would have come out with songs like that, modern day Oasis sounding songs. So I like it from that perspective. Noel's solo career, I think I quite enjoy. I feel like he's always one step away from making a really great album. And again, I don't quite know what that step is. But yeah, Blooming Rising, I think, I know it's had a mixed reaction, but I think it's my favourite song of this run of EPs.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to this EP because it's got Come On Outside on it, hasn't it? Yeah. And I hope that's going to be great.
Yeah.
It might not be.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I quite like it. And I think hopefully this exploration into new sounds will conjure up a really good record somewhere down the line.
Right.
But I quite like the fact he's just doing what he wants to do. I mean, there's quite something quite nice about that.
Yeah.
Liam, I think it's the best decision in the world was to sign with Warner.
Yeah.
And I remember someone who's relatively close to him, they work for Warner. We spoke to them before the Liam news came out, and they said he's working with songwriters. And I thought, oh my God, that's going to be a tough sell to the Oasis fan base. But after thinking about it, I thought that's perfect because he worked with songwriters his whole career.
Exactly.
Like, you just need to replace Noel with a songwriter, and if they're good, you're away. And the songwriters he's chosen, I mean, you can't get better than Greg Kirsten and his
Andrew Wyatt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Simon Aldridge.
Because I just think, and the songs he's written or Simon's written for him, or with Simon, I think are some of his best.
Yeah.
What a strange choice on the face of it, but a great choice.
I know. But it's as I say, I think that, like you're saying, we know that some of them are his songs originally, you know, because we know there's acoustic-y demos of them and things like that. So you know that the kernel of the song is there, but then it is, I think, a lot of his stuff that he did later, Oasis and BDI, was probably like helped a lot by Gen.
Yeah.
You know, is the impression that I get that, you know, it makes me think of like Ringo when he was writing songs with the Beatles, but actually I think George helped him a lot. You know,
I mean,
it's sort of like, I don't think Noel probably would have helped that much. I've got no idea for definite.
From outside looking in, rather, I would assume that's the case.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see Liam proud of and excited about his career because I think whilst he always enjoyed Oasis, and I think at times he was the driving force behind it at times, because I think he was always, I mean, there's, you know, like that clip in where's that clip from where he's having an argument with Noel in a, it's like a bar, and they're having an argument about the NME because they slagged off the album, or was it Q magazine, or maybe it's in Lord Don't Slow Me Down. There's a clip somewhere, I might be making this up, no I'm not, there's a clip somewhere where Liam's where Liam's arguing with Noel about doing an interview with NME or Q, and because they slagged off the latest album, so and stuff like that. I always felt like he does want to have that career.
He's proud of it.
Yeah,
he's proud. He supports it like a football team.
Yeah, but now I feel that's even more so. Now he's on his own. And I was lucky enough to go to the listening party for the first album, which was just around the corner at Pretty Green.
Oh wow!
And they played the album in full, and then he came down and did photos, and you could tell like he was so excited about the album. And also, you don't often get the artist showing up to a listening party.
Really?
Like, I think he was really kind of on the warpath of promotion, which is so unusual for Liam. Yeah. Like, someone who, like, you would never see on chat shows, because I think Ignition or whoever would always be like, let's just not put him there. Let's just leave him out of this one. And they'd send Noel out to do it all. But I think that actually they were wrong, because Liam's, you know, we know he's really funny. But I think he can go on a charm offensive. Yeah. And when he does, it's like, boom.
It's gold.
No one else does it like him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it must have been part of the deal with Warner. They're like, look,
oh,
BDI
yeah,
failed,
definitely.
But it's like, if we're going to put money behind you and we're going to take a chance on you here, you've got to play ball. You've got to do the radio interviews.
Yeah, definitely.
You've got to go and do the, like, you know, the, I think it was Noisy, like, go and do the stuff with
yes,
kids in
yeah,
school,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or all these things that you could imagine Liam and BDI going, I'm not doing that, you know what I mean? But now it's like, okay, I'll go and do it.
Yeah.
He's been given this chance and he's bloody taken it with both hands and run with it.
But I think as a solo artist, you can do that because it's you. You're not representing, you're not trying to be cool in a band. This is you as a solo artist.
Yeah.
As you said, I think he's loving it. And I think it's an amazing rebirth, really, from where he was post BDI. I mean, I remember thinking maybe he'll just go away for 10 years and we won't see anything from him. But to come back like this with two really strong records.
Yeah.
And like a bag full of good singles.
Yeah.
It's quite impressive.
Yeah. So have you personally being in here and Absolute, have you had the chance to meet any of the guys?
So it's like a joke in the office that I'm a big Oasis fan, but I haven't interviewed either of them because they're always, Liam's always fucking here. Like he's always here because he's like so into promotion. I think he's been in about three times in the last year. But no, I've never interviewed them. I think Liam, I'd love the interview. And I'd really enjoy it. I think Noel, I might be a little bit too panicky about my questions and the interview to ever enjoy it. But I'm fingers crossed. One day I will.
One day.
Yeah.
But do you think that? Do you think that you would, if they said, "Oh, Ben, yeah, so Noel's coming in to promote Blue Moon Rising next week. Do you want to do it?" Would you say yes, or would you have to like?
Oh, I have to say yeah. Yeah. I've met Liam, and he was really super nice. I met him a couple of times actually, but he was really nice both times. Noel I haven't met but you can't turn that down. No. Trouble is I think I'd go in really deep. I think I'd start asking him like about chord structures like of Idler's Dream and like
whatever happened to the song The Red, White and the Blue that I heard about
it? That's what it's like. Now what's the meaning behind Alone on the Rope? Just talk me through it. I think he'd just roll his eyes and probably walk out.
Because that's the thing, these, you know, it's like I know Tony McCarroll pretty well now, and I've interviewed him a few times, and you know, I'll ask him questions, and I know more than he does, so it's kind of pointless almost.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, oh, and how did you come up with that? And he goes, well, I just played it, you know, and you're like, okay, so whose idea was it to do the, you know, the start, the cloudburst with a drum intro? You know, he doesn't know, he can't remember. But, you know, if someone said to you, oh, what was it like when you went in and recorded that on 2 weeks ago Thursday when you went in and played, you know, that record, you'd be like, I don't know, it's my job. That's what I do every day. So,
yeah, you don't, for them it's so normal. But for us it's like creating
and
magic.
You're probably drunk or hungover.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the other thing as well.
And I think they didn't know they were making a classic. Yeah. I mean, I think they hope they did, but, you know. Yeah. It's funny, isn't it, when and we see it quite a lot interviewing people, you talk about making classic albums and most of the time, like 90% of the time, they're just unaware. They're like, well, we're just making this record. We didn't know it was going to become, you know, this important album.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Same as like when Noel was talking about Morning Glory recently, and he was like, yeah, they were demos. Like, they just did the demos and went, yeah, that'll do. But, you know, they didn't, because it's a strange sounding album, you know.
And,
and like you talk about, you know, I interviewed Nick Ingman, who then did the strings on Be Here Now, and I'm like, oh yeah, well, the string, who did the strings on Morning Glory? And like, there aren't any strings on Morning Glory. Like, there's no strings on it. Like, there's an electronic string, Cast in the Shadow, And but you think of it as like a Lush album with all these strings. It hasn't got any, you know, it's so weird. But it's basically demos, you know, and I think that's why it's got a real strange sound to it.
There's something about the sound of that, particularly songs like I always thought that like for some reason Roll With It and maybe Hey Now. But I think the reason actually is because they were songs written on an acoustic guitar that were then electric, in inverted commas, songs.
Right.
So I think that's why they're, because the bass of them is an acoustic guitar, which is quite a strange thing for like big electric songs, like Roll With It, for example.
Yeah,
It's a weird album, isn't it? And it sounds kind of, strange. I can't describe it. And then they just decide to throw in like helicopter sound effects and like a little blast of Michael Jackson every now and again. But I like that, because, and there was lots of that in those first two albums of like strange little things creeping in that didn't, that weren't big things, but just kind of like little background things.
I know. And one of the favourite things I did on like a Twitter thread was, what's your favourite noises in Oasis? Because I'm going to do an episode on it because it's so great. You know, you've got Just Take My Watch Off, you've got,
yes, a classic.
Know, all that sort of stuff. I love all that, you know, and that's, thing like most bands don't include that stuff.
No,
you know.
A little cough here and there.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
An airplane sound for no reason.
I know, it's brilliant. You know, I love it. Yeah, and while you're here, Ben, what I just wanted to do, we mentioned online, obviously we've got this book coming out. I say we coming out, I haven't written it, which is brilliant. It's just got the Oasis, official Oasis podcast in the front.
That's all you want.
It, which is great. It's my interviews, though, so I should really be getting
Take the credit, yeah. Without the work, yeah.
But anyway, we're giving away a free copy of it. And what I said was on Twitter, if you want to give us your favourite Oasis moment. And I didn't, because I've got patrons out there and I've got people I know personally, and, you know, we don't want to be dodgy with who I pick. So I thought I'd leave it up to you. So
this is very impressive. It's like you're governed by Ofcom. Like, it's quite impressive. I think I've picked my favourite. There was a couple of good ones, though.
Well, do you want to give us the other good ones as well? And we maybe do consolation prizes for those.
Okay, so Sean tweeted saying, outside the Cat House in Glasgow, when they played two sold-out nights for the first time ever, and Bonehead is outside trying to sell guest list tickets for 20 quid.
What's the
handle? Sean, how do we say that last name, do you think?
McLaughlin,
yeah.
Okay.
This is another Bonehead one. he had the time of his life, by all accounts. Simon Hughes says, being in the front row at Nebworth and the guy behind me buying drinks all day, all day, he was off his face and he thought I was Bonehead just because I've got a bald head. Did he not think, why is Bonehead in the crowd? Which I loved. My favourite one, though, just because this is one of my favourite Oasis moments, I remember seeing this interview, if we can call it that, and just it embodying everything that's great about Liam. It's from Thomas Mahon, I think that's how you say his name. And he just simply tweeted, it has to be, I'll tell you what, kids, I'd rather walk.
Oh, the Cathay Pacific.
Yeah, which is, and they're still banned to this day. Oh, I think, fantastic. I'm sure Noel said recently, like maybe in the last couple of months, that he couldn't fly that airline because he's still blacklisted. Let it go, lads. It's been 20 years.
He's very nice now. He's been off the coast for years.
I love that. To get banned from an airline, though, that is true rock and roll.
Yeah. After 1975, been banned. Oh, no, they just refused to fly because it's bad for the environment.
It's the wrong kind of banning,
They're in the rowboat over to do their tours. But anyway. All right, Ben, thank you so much for that.
Thank you, James.
And we'll
thank
get
you.
The book over to Thomas when it comes out.
Oasis arrived in Perth last night and started their Australian tour, ignoring adoring fans with a trademark contempt. While their egos would fit into a truck, Turagos took them away. But today they couldn't escape claims of shocking behaviour on the flight from Hong Kong to Perth.
It was like a flight from hell.
Passengers from the Cathay Pacific flight say the band's behaviour was dangerous, forcing the captain to intervene.
They were throwing things at passengers, they were abusive, They were disgusting towards the air crew.
As the band members played tourists at Rottnest, lead singer Liam Gallagher couldn't resist having his say about the flight.
I don't give a flying what comes in, because I'll tell you kids, I'd rather walk.
Which is just what the band might be doing, because Cathay Pacific is demanding a good behaviour guarantee before allowing the band back on board. That prompted this threat to the Cathay Pacific captain.
Yeah, and he told me to shut my mouth and like carry on. I'm like, which is fine, because I like that.
Who told you to shut your mouth?
Some panhead who wants to stab him with a pickaxe.
That's enough. That's enough, lads. Really.
The Dawkins are taking their complaints to the federal police.
I'm surprised that one that they weren't taken away by the federal police when they arrived at the airport, because if it had been you or I carrying on like that, I'm damn sure that that's exactly where we would have ended up with in jail.
Deborah Bishop, 7 hour news.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for coming. It's
much
been a pleasure.
Appreciated. This is obviously the people listening to it can't see where we are.
We're in a grey basement. So.
Yeah, but it is very, very cool. It's better than me, you know, sitting here and like. Anyway, whatever. well, so where can the kids find you online?
So I have two podcasts. One you mentioned is called Long Player. So that's at Long Player Pod. And then I have a Bob Dylan podcast. If you love Bob Dylan and you want to hear a man droning on about Bob Dylan's albums for 20 minutes at a time, go and have a listen. It's called Bob Dylan Album by Album. And I'm on Twitter at Ben Burrell.
Yeah. And your day job, Absolute Radio. Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That actually pays the bills. I do the afternoon show on Absolute Radio, so 1 to 4 weekdays. We play a lot of Oasis. A lot.
Wonderful. Ben Burrell, thank you very much.
Thank you, mate.
So that was cool. I hope you enjoyed that. Nice to see how the other half live, the proper radio people doing proper radio things, not just podcasts, but yeah, all good fun. Lovely guy, Ben. And yeah, as I say, make sure you check him out. Absolute Radio, Long Player Pod, Bob Dylan podcast, if you're into that. Absolute pleasure to meet him. What a lovely guy. So yes, congrats to the three prize winners there. Yep, we'll get the book over to Thomas, and then we're going to do a couple of consolation prizes as well for the other two guys, Sean McLaughlin and Simon Hughes. So we'll get those out as well. I will be in touch with you guys on Twitter. And just a quick reminder, the book is going to be available. It's not too far away now. It's sort of end of March. Yeah, Richard is beavering away with it, getting it finalised. So hopefully end of March is still a reasonable timescale. And I don't know if you follow me on Twitter, then you will have seen I've just been asking the questions about doing some live events. Just trying to figure that out at the moment. The only thing booked in so far is with McGee around October time in Monmouth. So if you're up for that, then get tickets. But yeah, that's just thinking about booking something myself. So we'll see. If you've got any ideas, then do feel free to get in touch. But yeah, lots of interesting names we might do something with. So yeah, we will see. Watch this space. Next week on the Oasis podcast, we will have, unless something else jumps up in the meantime, we're going to have an interview I just did today with Vinnie Peculiar, who is a really interesting guy, played with Bonehead in the Parlour Flames. That was cool, spoke to him today. So that'd be great. And also we're going to be getting back into the Oasis A to Zs. It's been far too long. I was looking, I think it was September, the last one I did. So sorry about that. But yeah, Cloudburst I've done, and Cloudburst will be next week. And then after that, it is Columbia. So if any of you guys want to do a breakdown on Columbia, then please do feel free to record it and send it across. Yeah, should be an interesting one, seeing as I have an interesting history with Columbia. But yeah, so next week, probably Vinnie Peculiar, and we get back into the A to Zs with Cloudburst. Anyway, thank you for listening to the Oasis podcast. And as ever, a big thanks to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly appreciated. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where we do exclusive episodes release the episodes early and other random stuff. Do please follow me on the socials, on Twitter and Facebook at Oasis Podcast and Instagram at Oasis Pod. Do please subscribe on iTunes and write some reviews if you can. I haven't had any of those over there for a little while, so that would be great. Please subscribe on iTunes or the podcatcher of your choice. And as ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.